F1A, number 22B.
Now, this is not all. This is by far not all. Once we have a matrix that is expressed through the capitalized terms, like we have where does word, and say this is the modern expression for Hosea, we that naturally can say, but the word is more just the term word. I can express, say, the word God through the seventh. And I can say, therefore, Hosea can show us the elaboration of the word as the word, which is a primary compound, and can see what is the inner nature of that word as the word. Now we come back to the synonymy principle. As the word stands for God, it must stand also for all the seven synonymous terms. So we can see that also Hosea caught that tone, and he presented therefore his message, his prophecy, not only by saying something about the word in absolute Christian Science and how it affects the word in Christian Science, but he elaborated it through mind and spirit and soul and principle, life, truth and love. That's what we have in the prophecy. So we can ask ourselves now, what must those seven synonymous terms express? What must they express when they are under the category of word as word? When they are in that first box, which gives us a very definite standpoint, we can call it also a standpoint, that point of intersection. Say, it's a very definite standpoint, that word as the word. Therefore, whatever we say about mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love must be a coin, must have the impress, the signet, so to say, of the word as the word. And that is the reason why then, if we come to the word as the Christ, which also is presented in the seven synonymous term, those seven synonymous terms tell a different story than Hosea, because there the same seven synonymous term are under the impress of something else, of word as the Christ. And so with every one of the prophets, so that we can see, we cannot just always say mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love. We also must see exactly, very specifically, what mind, so that we must ask ourselves now, what must mind be in the word of the word, quite differentiated from mind in the word as the Christ in Joel, quite differentiated from mind in Amos, which is the word as Christianity, and so through the whole matrix. What makes the difference? And in order to show that, we must introduce a new subject. When we begin to see the matrix with its matrix elements, then finally we had an answer for something that was lingering in our thoughts for many, many decades. I think I told you right at the beginning that when one was a student and young student of Christian Science and wanted to see the signs of that Christian Science in the textbook, one was always asking, now, Mrs. Eddy speaks about laws and about laws and about that you discovered the laws of life, truth and love, and that's the law of Christ and the law of mind and the law of Christianity and so on. Always laws, laws, laws. But what are the laws? How could we define the laws? That we could never answer up to this point. Up to the point where we began to define a matrix through the two indices and gave to those two indices definite epitomes, we could never really define what a law is. Now, what is a law in general? Quite in general. Well, naturally, every dictionary defines it a little bit different, but fundamentally, a law will always state that there are invariable relationships between certain defined factors, that you have certain factors that are related to each other, and that that relationship is always the same, and because it's always the same and does not change, there you get a sense of law. A law consists of factors or elements, no matter what you call them, for factors and of relation and of definite relationships that can be defined clearly how these factors are related. If we can see that in a spiritual science, then we can formulate laws. And only as we have laws and different laws, we can apply laws to our everyday problems. Now, here we can see very easily with a matrix that the matrix gives us definite factors and relationships. For instance, if we take the word as the word, as Hosea, then we can see that the law that can be established there must have the factors in it that the word in absolute Christian science has an impact on the word in Christian science, and that that defines the relationship which is unchangeable. So with every point of intersection, we get new laws. Every point of intersection is a relationship, an invariable relationship between two other factors. First, the relationship of word with the Christ, and then the word with Christianity, and then the word with science, and afterwards the Christ with the word, the Christ with science, Christ with Christianity. So there are always definite relationships. And so we can define the laws. Now, this is something that John Dawley was not doing and not giving. His time was not ripe for such a thing. And so we can see that we had to build further on the basis of the fundamentals that John Dawley gave us and could finally arrive at the answer to the question, what are laws? Now, in order to see the practicality of it, I think we do best when we take these laws as they are stated in the Minor Prophet book and with the symbols of Hosea, for instance, first look at such a law. So, if you open up the Minor Prophet book at page 41, going over to 42. There you have in the middle of the page, printed in italics, the elements of the law. And so there I tried for the first time to capture really the categories of being into definite, lawful relationships. Now we take Hosea, and we know that Hosea is the point of intersection of what? We know it's an intersection of the vertical that says the monotheism potency of God good. That's a vertical. And we know that that has the Christ that comes to us constantly. And at the point of intersection of the horizontal, namely at the horizontal word, where the purpose is defined, namely the purpose that is defined, that God is only God good, and that there is no other God besides God. The purpose is defined that there are not two powers, two laws at work, but only one God at work. And so that this disproves the belief that there is another God at work. If we take those two elements, then we can constitute a law. Let's see how I try to state it. And always remember, I printed that 25 years ago. Though I still marvel that I could do that even then, so we have to remind ourselves that perhaps today I would here and there word it a little bit different, but in the main or in the whole, I would say the tonality is still right. So, can you see we have there on page 41 on the last quarter of the page, Roman 1, and then on the other page, Roman 2. Now, Roman 1 and Roman 2, afterwards with other prophets, we may have a Roman 3 or even a Roman 4, that doesn't matter. They indicate the factors in the law. They indicate which factors are always there in the law and how they are related to each other, so that they never change. A law is something that never changes. So we have first, Roman 1, a sense of the vertical, the word God constantly manifests himself infinitely as ideas of God good. That's the vertical we have seen. That is the word from the absolute sense under the Christ roof category naturally. Therefore, God good is the only power. It manifests itself only as God good, so that there is no other power coming to us as God good. It's a very simple statement, a very clear statement. And then on the other side, Roman 2, now we have the impact that it has on the relative standpoint, and this disproves at the same time that any cause outside of God can achieve anything good. Can you see a very simple starting point? It goes out from two factors that are related. Two factors, which the one absolute factor comes in and first says, I am God good, and as the Christ, I am God good that constantly comes to the whole universe, to you and to me and the whole universe, as good. And therefore, what does it do to the human sense? Now we come to the second factor. It disproves the belief. You see, now we come to the belief sense. It disproves to us. Disproves at the same time our belief that there can be any other cause next to God good. Is that clear? So we can state just with two factors that are related, closely related, we can state what really Hosea wanted to bring out. That he wanted to bring out that the ways of the Lord are straight, and those that walk therein are successful, and they that do not walk therein will fall. It shows that there is only one God, one way, one law, one power, and that power constantly comes to us and disproves that there is another power at work, that we can be successful with another cause, with another power, with another law outside of God. It fails. We fall in it. So, if we keep that in mind, then we have stated the law with two factors. Yes? Yeah? Yes. But we'll see it. So, now, if we talk about God, then we can also talk about mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. If a law that is stated with the term God in it, as it is here, then we can also replace that term God with a synonymous term, which means that we can elaborate that law. And that's naturally the purpose of any law. Say, we have a very clear-cut formula, say, for the law of gravitation. Those factors therein are definite. Every factor must be always considered in that formula, no matter if we apply it to the apple that fell from the tree on Newton's head, or if we define it as the tides between the moon and the earth, the gravitational forces, no matter where we apply it, every application can be infinitely diversified in its application, but the law remains the same. That's the point, that the law remains the same. So here too, we see that we therefore could elaborate that law and could say to ourselves, well, look here, that law we could elaborate by going through the seven synonymous terms, but we have to stick to the elements of that law, to the factors and relationship to that law. And so let's see if we can see that when I do that on page 42. We read together what I have given as examples. Now, an elaboration of the law are always examples of the law. They are not changing the law. But as I said, like in gravitation, I can have a book falling from the table. I can have a brick falling from the roof. I can have an apple falling from the tree. Whatever it is, the phenomena is always different, but the law is always the same. So you can see that the law is very practical because it can be applied to any situation. Not just to one situation, but to every situation where that law works. So let's see if we can see this elaboration and see where is the Roman 1 and where is the Roman 2. Yes? From those two factors. So I have here in mind God, and now I replace God through mind. The divine mind is constantly coming to man and the universe. You see, that's the Christ. The coming down to the human is constantly coming. It has the power of coming to man and the human. That's the Christ matrix. As what? Naturally, now that I have replaced God with the synonymous term mind, I must see that mind comes as ideas of mind, but not as any old idea, but only as the idea of mind. So it comes to me, that mind, as creative ability. You know, creative ability as an idea of mind. So it comes to me as creative ability. Therefore, now comes Roman 2, therefore, mortal mentality, can you see, it must be the opposite of mind. Mortal mentality, I can't just take now the physical senses or sin or sickness or anything like that. I take the very opposite of mind. That's why we have to know also the opposites of the ideas. Therefore, mortal mentality has no chance of producing anything constructive. Well, producing anything constructive is just saying has no creative ability. I started out with divine mind comes as creative ability, therefore the counterfeit of it, mortal mentality, has no creative ability. Naturally, you can, when you think, you are much rounder in your terminology, you are not so stereotyped that you use just exactly the same word, you use the same tonality. So instead of saying here, has no creative ability, I said, well, it just doesn't have really, cannot really produce anything constructive, which is creative ability. Yes? So, is that clear? That you take a synonymous term, that synonymous term must always express itself through ideas of that specific synonymous term, yes? And that disproves the very counterfeit of the synonymous term, and what that counterfeit, or what mind wanted to express, and its counterfeit. So it has no creative ability. Let's see the next example in mind, if we see it again. So mind constantly manifests itself to all. You have mind in its Christ office, constantly comes to us. See, always we must have a sense in that whole Christ matrix that God comes to us. That's the Christ. Because that's the roof category. And you have a feeling that we are standing under the blessing and the stream of grace and the floods of grace that comes down from heaven and does something to us. So again, mind constantly manifests itself to all as what? As, now I have taken the divine intelligence, mind is intelligence, wisdom, yes, is an idea of mind, infinite apprehension and comprehension, ideas of mind. Then comes Romans 2, therefore human intelligence, the opposite of divine intelligence. Therefore I must say something about the human intelligence and reasoning have no chance of equaling true wisdom. See? They cannot equal true wisdom. There is nothing besides the one intelligence. And you have again a reproving of an opposite. Let's take the next one. Mind constantly floods the whole universe. You see, I always changed a little bit the Christ touch. That Christ coming to us, but in the first one I said constantly comes to man. In the second I said constantly manifests itself to us. And now I say another rendering, constantly floods the whole universe. I try to be a bit flexible in the terminology, but staying with the tonality. You see, the tonality doesn't change if I say manifests itself or floods or comes. It's always the same from somewhere to us. So mind constantly floods the whole universe with divine power and action. So I have taken power and action as an idea of mine. Therefore, the opposite of it, the counterfeit of mind, is willpower. Has no chance of bringing about a divine manifestation. Cannot do anything. So, in this way, we could go on and take other ideas of mind that would flow into your consciousness. You could take now, for instance, law, that we could say, well, the divine mind constantly manifests itself to the universe as a divine law, Therefore, material laws can have no law, or are not lawful, or cannot achieve anything lawful. Can you see, it's a very simple law. It would seem to be a law that perhaps you have always somehow seen and applied, but perhaps not so consistently. Not so consistently. Therefore, a law has some kind of great value, because it trains us into thinking systematically. It trains us to structure not only our consciousness, that must be there before, but then use that structure of consciousness to be drilled into thinking according to laws, and not at random. You see, without laws, we just would have the capitalized terms, and would not really see how they are related to each other. What are the lawful relationships between those capitalized terms, between the word and mind, between the word and the word as mind? But when we see them, when we see here word as word, as mind, then we have a definite law, and then we can say, and this applies also to spirit and to soul and to principle and to life and truth and love, and we drill ourselves in the spiritual manual of our armament. So we begin to think in laws and no more in isolated ideas, and that's quite a difference. So instead of having a random connection, random relationship, random blendings of what we know in Christian Science, we know a little bit about the Christ, a little bit about soul, a little bit about love, and a little bit about the world, and a little bit about spirit, and a little bit about science, and we put them together just as they come. This is not law. We are not thinking according to laws. And that's why that question was always foremost in our mind. I can trace it back to the beginning of the 1930s, that I was constantly asking the practitioners and whoever was regarded as somebody who knew something, tell me what are the laws. Tell me what are the laws. If I study any subject, I know what the laws are. If I study mathematics, I know what the laws are. If I study physics, I know what the laws are. Tell me what is the laws. The answer was always the same. Well, you know, the laws are laws. Or the laws are God's laws. Saying nothing. Yes. Okay, we make a break here.